You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Laura Fitzgerald, in for Vicky Gonzalez. More than 350,000 people have been arrested by federal immigration authorities since President Donald Trump returned to the White House. As arrests and detentions have climbed, so have reports of people being taken to hospitals by immigration and customs enforcement agents because of illness and injury. This can range from treatment of pre-existing conditions to problems stemming from their arrest or detention. But recent reporting has found that once detainees are taken in for treatment, hospitals are refusing to allow contact with these patients, and even failing to confirm whether detainees are even under their care at that location. Claudia Boyd Barrett of KFF Health News reported on how the family and lawyers of people in ICE custody are struggling to find them in California hospitals. Claudia, thank you so much for joining Insight.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, before we get to the treatment of ICE detainees in hospitals, can you tell us a little bit about the state of medical treatment in ICE facilities, and under what circumstances do patients in ICE custody get taken to local hospitals instead of receiving treatment at a detention center facility?
Right. So ICE is supposed to provide medical care at immigration detention facilities and provide a full range of health services. But what we know from various reports and lawsuits is that that doesn't seem to be happening. A lot of detainees don't seem to be getting the medical care that they need, or they're not getting needed medications. And it's not just that. Conditions inside the facilities aren't good. We've heard reports that there's overcrowding, there's a lack of hygiene, they're serving moldy food, the water tastes bad, sometimes it's very, very cold in these facilities. And then some immigrants are also held in these temporary facilities, which really are just very bare bones and don't offer much of anything in the way of medical care. And so the way that people end up going to the hospital, that there's basically two different ways. It may be that they haven't actually even been to a detention center yet. They've just been arrested in a raid or outside their home. And then they get sick during that incident, or they're injured, and then they get taken to a hospital. And then another way is that people get very sick in detention, or maybe they already have a condition that flares up and they need to go to a hospital.
Yeah, you already mentioned some of the concerns, but what really are the concerns that you found in your reporting about what's happening to patients detained by immigration authorities when they're taken to hospitals? And also, how did you find out about this story?
Sure. Well, you know, the biggest concern is that when people are detained by immigration enforcement and need to be hospitalized, they can enter into this sort of information black hole where neither their families nor their legal representatives know where they are or what's going on. And that's because, from what I'm hearing, ICE isn't always providing that information, and neither are the hospitals. So they won't provide information if an attorney or family calls or visits the hospital to ask for the patient. And then some hospitals are also prohibiting their staff from contacting family members. And so that's a problem, because, you know, if someone's sick or injured, they're in a really vulnerable position, and it's normal for people to want some kind of family support when they're in the hospital. And then, you know, especially if they're in ICE detention, you know, they're also often, we're hearing, they're shackled and they're being guarded by ICE in their rooms and subject to, you know, interrogation even. And, you know, it's very intimidating. So, people want their family around to provide them with some kind of moral support, and then also their attorneys for legal support. And yet, another big problem is, you know, people in immigration detention, they have a right to consult with an attorney, but if the attorney can't find them or they can't talk to them, then that right is basically being denied. So these are situations where people may especially need legal help because they've been detained and they need to know their legal rights, or they're facing pressure to agree to deportation. You know, maybe they're being asked to sign papers they don't understand. So, you know, it's important for them to have access to an attorney. But in these situations, they're not being allowed to even contact their attorneys, or their attorneys can't find them. And then finally, one last concern is, you know, if medical staff can't contact a patient's family members, that can be a medical problem for the patient, because, you know, families can often provide some context about the patient's medical condition, their medical history, and what kind of medications they're taking or are allergic to. And especially, you know, if a patient's unconscious or can't for some reason express their wishes, and family can provide input on their behalf.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the patient in your story, Julio Pena, and what happened to him?
Sure. So the patient, his name is Julio Cesar Pena. He's in his early 40s, and he's very sick. He has end-stage kidney disease. He survived a heart attack a few months ago. He can't walk very well. He can't see very well. And he's been in the U.S. for a long time, since he was about 12. He has a son in the military. As far as we know, he has no criminal record. And in December, ICE arrested Julio outside his home in the LA area and put him in detention. Not surprisingly, he got very ill and had to go to a hospital. And then that's where things got really scary for him and his family. So ICE wouldn't tell his wife or his attorney where he was. The attorney tried calling a hospital near the detention center, and they told her they couldn't say if he was there, because if a patient's in ICE custody, that only ICE could tell her. And then Julio, he was able to call his wife, but he said ICE agents were there in his hospital room, and he wasn't allowed to say where he was. And he was really scared that he was going to die and wouldn't be with his family.
Mm-hmm. And how did his family react to not being able to see him in the hospital?
Well, they were, you know, really upset, of course. His wife, Lydia, is his main caregiver. She's always been there for him through this whole ordeal. He's had kidney disease, I think, for something like 20 years. She's always with him every time he needs to go to the hospital, which happens quite frequently. You know, she likes to be with him. You know, she wanted to be there. She wanted to make sure he was being well cared for. She wanted to sit next to him, hold his hand, you know, give him encouragement the way that she always does when he gets sick, and especially in this situation, which was so scary because he was also in immigration custody. His son also wanted to see him. He's, like I said, in the military. I believe he took a leave of absence to try and be there. And then, yeah, the family drived out to Atlanta, apparently, to try and see if they could see him, and were turned away from the detention center and weren't given any information. And Lydia said she was just kind of glued to her phone the whole time. Like, she was hoping her husband would call her. And she, you know, she got at least, you know, a couple of brief phone calls, is my understanding. It would be sort of every couple of days, but it wasn't anything very substantial or for very long. So she sort of felt that wasn't enough.
And what does ICE say about this?
So for this particular story, unfortunately, the ICE didn't respond to my questions or requests for information about their policies. I did a previous story on ICE treatment of detainees in hospitals, and a spokesman there did say, you know, all detainees have access to phones that they can use to contact their families and their lawyers, which does seem to be true in Julio's case. He was at least able to call his wife a few times, but as I said, very briefly. It's possible he could have called his attorney, but it sounds like he didn't know his lawyer's number, and no one was trying to facilitate him, you know, being able to call her. And ICE does have guidelines for people in custody, so they're not specifically for people who are in a hospital, but the guidelines do say that people in custody should have access to a phone, they should be able to have visits from family and friends, and they should be able to speak with legal counsel in private.
Mm-hmm. And Claudia, I'm wondering, what role, if any, do hospitals play in all of this? Do they have policies on the books that detail how they manage patients who are in ICE custody or law enforcement custody?
Yeah, so hospitals have different policies for sharing information and different ways of interacting with law enforcement. But some common policies that come into play in these situations is putting extra restrictions on release of any information about patients. So this is, we've heard, is sometimes called blackout policies. And this can be where the patient, the hospital may change the patient's name in the hospital directory. So if someone calls and asks for the patient, or if someone's looking to find the patient, even someone within the hospital is trying to find that patient by their name, they won't be able to find them. Or they might just like flag the patient's name in the directory so that if somebody calls, the staff just knows not to provide any information about that particular patient. And you know, hospitals say that they have these policies in place for protection, right? Like the hospitals are not jails or detention centers. They don't have the same kind of security infrastructure. So, you know, the hospitals say, well, they just, you know, they want to make sure that no one can get in to sort of, to try and, you know, break the patient out of the hospital or try and cause some kind of harm or disruption to the staff or disrupt the care or smuggle in, you know, drugs or weapons. And probably also, I would think, to, you know, stop people who are in detention from leaving the hospital because they are in detention. And then I think just something else that seems to be happening in hospitals is that the hospitals seem to be kind of deferring to the law enforcement agencies, in this case, to ICE, to decide what, if any, contact the patient should have with their family and attorney, and whether doctors can call the patient's family. And also whether the staff can provide legal resources to a patient. And often, at least in the case of immigration agents, they seem to say no.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense, how do health workers feel about these practices?
I mean, the health workers I've talked to, you know, they're very frustrated. They're worried. They say they feel like they're being forced into situations that they feel are unethical. You know, they're being told by higher ups that they shouldn't contact family, but then the health workers feel like that's, you know, that's a violation of medical ethics. You know, they say they're treating patients who are shackled and guarded when they feel like they don't need to be. Some are being told they can't provide legal resources to their patients. Sometimes ICE is in the room, you know, even during medical conversations that should be private. So there's just a lot of frustration that ICE is kind of being allowed to do whatever they want, and that hospital administrators are sort of allowing that to happen. And then I think there's just also just fear among hospital workers that, you know, if they do stand up, if they do push back or try to intervene, that, you know, they could get in trouble, you know, with their employers, or the ICE agents could get aggressive, or even try to prosecute them for interfering. And then, you know, ICE agents can just, they can also just refuse, and they're armed. So there was one news report about a hospital in Minneapolis where staff reportedly, you know, asked their security guards at the hospital, like, please, can you remove these ICE agents from the hospital? And the guards just refused because they said, well, the agents have guns. You know, we're not gonna get involved.
Hmm. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Claudia Boyd Barrett, a reporter with KFF Health News, about a recent article detailing how the whereabouts of ICE detainees being treated in California hospitals are not being shared with their family and lawyers. So, Claudia, in your reporting, you also spoke to a lot of lawyers who have been having trouble accessing their clients when they're being treated in a hospital. What stories did you hear from them?
So I spoke with one attorney out of LA, Nicholas Thompson Yedas. He said, you know, he had at least two of his clients were registered under aliases at different hospitals, and initially the hospitals denied the clients were there and refused to let him meet with them. One of his clients was a man named Byron Rovidio Marin. He's a car wash worker. He was injured in a raid in August. Apparently, at least according to ICE, he was trying to run away from the ICE agents and scaling a fence, and he ended up breaking his leg. He was taken to Harbor UCLA Medical Center, and he was detained there for over a month, never charged with anything. Apparently, you know, he wasn't allowed to. He was denied access to family. He was denied access to his lawyer. According to his attorney, he was interrogated there. You know, even though he was in pain, he was under the influence of medication. So it's just a very stressful, very isolating situation for this patient. Eventually, his attorneys, they did sue, and a judge issued a restraining order, and he was released.
Are there any laws to prevent patients from being isolated in this way from either their family or legal support?
ICE has its own guidelines for people in detention, and they say the guidelines state that the detainees should be allowed access to a phone, they should be allowed visits from family during certain days and hours, and that they should be allowed private calls and or visits with attorneys. These guidelines are not a law, but they can't be legally enforced necessarily, but it does show that the agency says, at least on paper, that's what should happen. They don't specifically address, how this should work in hospitals. And the guidelines do say, these things are encouraged, but within security and operational constraints. And the guidelines do say also that if a patient is in the hospital and is terminally ill or critically ill, that that I should defer to the hospital as far as like contacting the family and next of kin, although they can still make decisions about whether they're allowed visits. So that's family visits, and then as far as just speaking with an attorney, like that's a constitutional right. And so people in immigration detention, that they have a right to speak with a lawyer and they have a right to speak with the lawyer privately. And that's regardless of immigration status.
Mm-hmm. Your article primarily focuses on hospitals in California, right? But during your reporting, were you able to find out if these practices are taking place in other states?
Yeah, it seems like it. So there's an organization that I spoke with called Medical Justice Alliance, and they advocate for the medical needs of people in law enforcement custody. I spoke with their medical director, William Weber, and he said, basically these are common practices across the country for patients in custody generally, including in ICE custody. I also spoke with a couple of attorneys and some health workers in other states, Oregon, Washington, I believe the Chicago area as well, and they said they'd encountered these issues too.
Mm. And I'm wondering also, what ended up happening to Julio Peña, the patient you talked about in your story?
Yeah, the family, they didn't find out until a couple of weeks after he was in the hospital where he was. So they found out because eventually the attorney got a call from Atalanta saying that Julio was going to be discharged and was finally told what hospital he was at. So the family, gets excited and rushed out to see him, to pick him up. And then when they got there, they found that Julio was unconscious and that he was intubated. He'd had a bad seizure a couple of days earlier and nobody had told the family, no one had told his lawyer. He was still shackled by his hand and his foot. ICE technically released him to the family. They signed some documents and they unshackled him, but he still had to stay in the hospital, I think, another week to recover. And now he's back home. So he's still recovering, and but he's also fighting deportation. His family's trying to file a petition to adjust his legal status.
Mm-hmm. And just as a reporter, what are you going to be looking for moving forward
with these cases? Well, I mean, I just plan to keep my eye out and keep looking at these issues of what happens to people once they are detained and what kind of medical care they're getting or not getting. I think this is an important issue to keep an eye on because mm-hmm. it really can be a life or death situation for these folks.
Absolutely. Claudia, thank you so much for joining Insight and sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Claudia Boyd Barrett is a reporter with KFF Health News discussing her reporting on how ICE detainees are being treated in California hospitals and why their whereabouts are not being shared with their family and lawyers. Still ahead, a local children's book author joins us with her latest work, described as a joyful ode to black hair. The author behind This Hair Belongs joins us. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Laura Fitzgerald, in for Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.